you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Start your Saturday with something that will grow your kiddos' brains and get their creative juices flowing. Join us at LAS in Pasadena for a morning of multilingual readings, interactive performances, and lots of kid fun. It's Super Fun Saturday on June 1st. Get your tickets at las.com/events.
Hey, this is Antonia Cerejido. You're listening to Imperfect Paradise from LAS Studios, the show about hidden worlds and messy realities. My colleague, a correspondent on this show, Emily Guerin, used to be a beat reporter covering the environment for our station at LAist. And she recently partook in a tradition that only audio journalists that have been in the game for some years get to do. Listen back to a story you did earlier in your career and mercilessly judge yourself. In 2018, she reported a story about how climate change is drying up the Colorado River.
So I'm standing at Lake Mead right now, and the bathtub ring, which is this really big white band that shows how far the lake has shrunk, it's about 130 feet tall. So that is how low the lake is.
Lake Mead is a huge reservoir that sits behind the Hoover Dam. It supplies water to cities like Los Angeles, Phoenix, and San Diego, and tons of farms. Recently, people have been panicking about the possibility of the reservoir drying up so much that no water makes it to those places. It's what we call Deadpool. And the bathtub ring is a symbol of that. It tells you just how far the water level has dropped. That's why Emily was there, back in 2018, walking back and forth along the Hoover Dam and talking to herself in a microphone.
Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing. So I'm walking along the edge of Lake Mead. So I'm standing at Lake Mead right now, and the bathtub.
So I'm standing at Lake Mead, which is the lake that backs up from Hoover
Dam. There's this 130 bathtub ring is super visible. So I'm standing at Lake Mead. The bathtub ring is super obvious, and that the ring is what shows how far the lake has shrunk since it was full.
Oh my God, this is so embarrassing for me to listen to now.
Okay, well, this is obviously Emily Guerin, who's now joined me. And Emily, what are you doing in that audio we just heard?
Well, I'm trying to get the take right, so I keep doing it over and over and like walking back and forth on top of the dam. And oh my God, it's just so cliche, Antonia. Like every journalist who's ever reported on the Colorado River has done a stand-up on Hoover Dam and talked about the bathtub ring.
I'm standing on the top of the Hoover Dam right now. You see those bathtub rings?
The white lines behind me, that used to be the water level.
See how gigantic those bathtub rings really are.
See how huge the bathtub ring has grown.
Well, I love that you had to join in the club of people who describe the ring. What made you cover it like that?
That's a good question. I think that I couldn't think of anything more original to do. And I also thought at the time that it was like a really obvious visual signaling impending doom. And I could just like go there and describe it and somehow convey the nature of the crisis. But thinking back on it and kind of what I've realized since then is that the bathtub ring, A, it's like actually not that interesting. It's just like a white line on a rock wall. But B, it really leaves out the juiciest part of the story. Like there's no people in the bathtub ring. And this is actually a people story. Like, people made this problem, and people can solve this problem. So the way things work on the Colorado River is that problems are solved by the 7 states that use the water. So when there's a crisis, like there is now, they all get together to figure out what to do. It's essentially a negotiation. They all know they have to use less water, but the question is, how much less, and who is going to take the cuts?
That sounds like a really intense negotiation.
It is really intense in a sort of wonky, dry water policy kind of way. But to me, what makes it so interesting is that this is one of the early cases in the U.S. of what happens when the shit really hits the fan and we actually run out of a resource. Like, we can't just kick the can down the road on the Colorado River like we do with pretty much every other hard climate change decision. Anyway, so when I said this is a people story, the people I'm talking about are these negotiators who are trying to cut that deal. There's 7 of them, one from each of the states that uses the water.
They're like water Avengers.
They are like water Avengers. I love that.
Yeah.
And I decided I wanted to follow them through those negotiations as they come up with a plan to save the river. I wanted to focus in particular on the lead negotiator from California, because California is kind of like the bully on the river. That's sort of their historical reputation. They use the most water. They have the biggest economy. They have a lot of money, a lot of people. And it's interesting because their current lead negotiator is the youngest and the least experienced of all of them. His name is J.B. Hamby, and he's 28 years old.
Did you ever think like, oh my God, all these dudes are so much older than me. I'm in over my head. This is crazy. Or did you not think those thoughts?
No, I didn't think about that.
This season on Imperfect Paradise, the Gen Z water deal maker. We take you behind the scenes of a historic negotiation that'll determine the fate of the Colorado River and everyone who relies on it.
You're affecting people's livelihood. You're putting people out of their homes. You're destroying the whole community.
This is a shit job. I mean, this is tough.
This is a historic thing coming, and it's on our shoulders to be able to resolve it.
He has a few good friends and a lot of enemies.
Probably one of the valuable lessons I learned on the river is nobody's going to change unless they absolutely have to and have no other choice but to.
The one person that you cannot negotiate with is Mother Nature. She will win every time.
Correspondent Emily Guerin takes it from here.
I first met J.B. Hamby at the annual Colorado River Conference. Everyone who uses or cares about the river is there. There's lawyers, journalists, there's presidents of tribal nations. This conference is so important, even some farmers show up just to find out what's going to happen to their water. J.B. had described it this way when I talked to him the week before the conference, which is officially called the Colorado River Water Users Association Conference. But everyone just calls it CRUA.
CRUA is like the prom of the Colorado River. Everybody shows up, and it's a big event, and everybody's there, and everybody sort of hobnobs and sees each other, and it's the thing that everybody's at.
Oh my God, you described it as the prom. I love that. Who's the prom king and the prom queen?
Who knows?
I know. There are 6 prom kings and 1 queen, the 7 lead negotiators. One from each of the states that uses Colorado River water. JB is one of them. For over 100 years, the 7 states along the river have regularly gotten together to decide how much water they all get to use. These negotiations take place every time a new problem comes up, like how much water should we let Mexico have? Or, wow, Phoenix is getting big. The last big negotiation took place in 2007, and there's a lot less water now than there was even then. CRUA takes place in December. So for the last 6 months, JB and the other negotiators have been arguing over how to keep the river from hitting Deadpool. At this point, they have 3 months left to come up with their first attempt at a deal. If they can't agree, nobody knows what will happen. The conference took place at the Paris Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. The hallways are lined with these massive portraits of French royalty and overstuffed benches that are a little too small for 2 people who don't really know each other to comfortably sit on. But that's where I sit with JB, knees almost touching, when I finally get to talk to him in person. He's tall, white, with a clean shave. He's wearing a gray suit with a lapel pin of the state of California, a bright white shirt, and a turquoise bolo tie. He has a fresh haircut and boots.
How's it being like the guy from California?
I am a guy from California.
This is JB's first conference as the lead negotiator from California. And whether he acknowledges it or not, there is a role he's stepping into. If this really were a high school prom, California would be the rich kid with the fancy car and the nice tux. On the Colorado River, California uses more water than any other state. For watering lawns and golf courses, for drinking water and growing food. And in the past, the other states have seen California as kind of a bully, taking more water than it's allowed to, and then being like, what are you going to do about it? I asked JB if he thought that perception was fair.
Of California as this, like, water bully, like, overusing.
Yeah, I know, not true at all.
In terms of a bully
or these sorts of, I think certainly envy is a thing. I don't think California has done anything wrong by developing water and putting it to use.
But it also seems like he's working hard to overcome the state's bad reputation. When I'm not talking to JB, I spend a lot of time watching him. He's always talking to someone, shaking hands, making unbroken eye contact, introducing people. Mostly, I don't see him much. He's always ducking in and out of these little side rooms.
There's a lot of secret meetings.
In the room next to us here, the commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation just walked into a little room, not sure who she's meeting with, and there's side rooms and suites. I was just in a meeting with the Colorado River Indian Tribes upstairs, and so there's all kinds of different meetings that people take. You know, in this main hallway here and in the little side nooks and crannies, people connect, chat, have conversations, be social, have real discussions, negotiate informally, so.
It's like the shadow conference, and then the conference is in there.
Yeah.
So while most people are going to panels like Considering Rural Enhancements, JB has been attending a different conference. I'm here at CRUA because of the shadow conference. I want to know what's actually happening between the people who have the most power on the river, and I don't think I'm going to figure it out in the panel discussions. I need to know what the gossip is, and I'm trying to find the people who will tell me. The next time I catch JB is when he's on stage with a bunch of California water people. We're gathered in the champagne room for an announcement.
Welcome, everyone, to this very important historic occasion. We appreciate everyone that's here to join today. We're grateful to be here today with
JB is standing at a lectern beneath a huge crystal chandelier. The wallpaper is turquoise and gold with trefoils and decorative wood paneling. The opulence of this room feels strategic, like California is trying to make a really big deal of this moment. JB's the MC. He introduces a series of speakers, all of whom have the same basic message.
California has certainly stepped up to protect the river systems and the communities that rely on it.
California continues to lead by example.
We're using less water than we've ever used in California. I think it's 3.7 million acre feet, and that's fantastic.
Deadpool is not mentioned once. And then JB begins to call people up one by one to sign all the agreements that have been made in California over the past 6 months to use less water.
So next up, we have the Metropolitan Water District, the Imperial Irrigation District, and the San Diego County Water Authority.
They walk up to the stage. There's the boots from the Imperial Valley, a farming region, the suits from Los Angeles, the suntanned guys in button-downs and ties from San Diego. They sit next to each other, they sign, they shake hands. They take one serious photo and one goofy one. It's very celebratory, very backpatting. Sadly, there is no champagne. I eavesdrop on a man sitting behind me who's whispering about what a big deal this is. Afterwards, I go ask him about it, and the woman sitting next to him, who turns out to be his wife, gives him this little wave and walks out of the room. She calls herself a water widow, he says. He spends so much time on Colorado River stuff, she comes to conferences like this one so they can spend some time together.
Do a test 1-2, testing 1-2, testing 1-2-3-4. Okay.
Can you tell me your name and where you're from?
You bet. It's Jim Madaffer, spelled M-A-D-A-F-F like Frank E-R, from San Diego. I am a past board chair of the San Diego County Water Authority.
Have you been coming to these conferences for a long time?
Yeah, I've been, this is about probably my 10th one over the last 10 years. Okay. Maybe 15th, I can't remember.
California uses far more Colorado River water than any other state, mostly for raising cattle and growing alfalfa, broccoli, and lettuce. But Jim doesn't see that as a problem.
California, you know, we don't go around saying, hey, we've got the lion's share of the water. What we instead say is we want to work with everybody. We recognize the compact gives us as much water as it does. But we also recognize the fact that we feed the entire country. It's not California. We feed.
Who's we when you say we?
The state. The state and all the produce that's grown in those ag areas. Those, for the most part, are shipped out of California all over the United States. If our water was cut off, guess what? There wouldn't be salads on their plates. There wouldn't be a lot of things that people rely on because of the water that California uses from the Colorado River.
When Jim throws out the possibility that their water could get cut off, it's not a hypothetical. That's how dire things have gotten, and that's what these ongoing negotiations are all about. But it's still important for California to show it's willing to use less. That's part of why people like JB and Jim are making such a big deal of these water conservation agreements that were signed today.
The level of collaboration right now is at an all-time high, and I think it's going to continue.
I'm realizing this is California's strategy at this conference. talking about how great they are at saving water and working together.
Relations with San Diego, Metropolitan, Imperial are at an all-time high.
All-time high. This congeniality is not normal. Historically, the boots and the suits have been at war over California's share of Colorado River water. The cities always want more. They try to buy it from the farmers, and the farmers feel like that's an attack on their way of life. Because if they lose their Colorado River water, they don't have anywhere else to get it from. But today in the Champagne Room, I don't see any hint of tension. In fact, what I see is this small pin on the lapel of the biggest urban water agency's president that says, "We are one," which seems a little bit performative, like they're trying to convince themselves it's really true.
This is all about relationships. If we have good relationships, if we trust each other, if we back each other up, we can make anything happen to help save the Colorado River.
A lot of people who work on the Colorado River talk this way. The river runs on relationships. It runs on trust. Most of the people who work on the river have been doing it for their entire adult lives. Have you been coming to these conferences for a long time?
I think my first crew was 1998.
Okay.
So 25 years. I missed a few years. It's a new venue. Usually it's at Caesars. So people are lost because these casinos are hard to navigate.
I'm standing in the hallway outside the Champagne Room just after the panel, talking to Michael Cohen. Cowboy boots, jeans, blazer. He's an environmental policy guy from Colorado. He tells me I missed something interesting earlier today, a contentious meeting of representatives from the upper Colorado River Basin. California is considered part of the lower basin, along with Nevada and Arizona. The upper basin states are Wyoming, Utah, New Mexico, and of course, Colorado.
Was that this morning?
Yeah, that was actually just in the room right over there. So it was right next door.
Why was it contentious?
Because there's still assertions from the upper basin that the lower basin is overusing water. And it depends how that's measured. But that, to me, suggests that they're still far apart in how they're going to resolve this huge problem, how to manage the river moving forward.
So, like, in this room, they're like, look at everything we've done. And in that room, they're like, you guys are still using too much.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly it. And I think part of this conversation is in response to their conversation.
They're, like, talking at the same time.
Through the wall, basically.
Through the wall.
Yes, they're talking through the wall to each other. And maybe the wall is a good metaphor because they're not really talking to each other.
The divide between the upper basin and the lower basin is another one of the big fault lines on the Colorado River. The two basins are extremely different. The upper is colder, higher, with snowier mountains and smaller cities and farms. The lower is hotter, drier, flatter, with way more people and bigger farms. For the most part, the upper basin puts the water in and the lower basin takes it out. When the Colorado River was divided up on paper 100 years ago, the upper and the lower basins each got about half the water. It's not divided evenly between the states, by the way. California, for example, gets about 14 times as much water as Nevada. But in real life, the lower basin has often used more than its share because the upper basin has never needed all of theirs. Still, the upper basin kind of always assumed the water would be there for them when they got around to needing it. But now, it's not. Climate change has shrunk the river. There's no more extra water to use. So now there's this huge fight between the two basins about who should cut back and how much.
We have to build trust back up again, and I think they're still working on that.
Can you be any more specific?
Pointing fingers from the upper basin at the lower basin doesn't build trust.
Are you talking about Colorado?
Yeah. Yes.
If the lower basin and the upper basin are rival high school cliques, then California and Colorado are their respective leaders. For decades, while California has been taking more than it has rights to on paper, Colorado has been pointing this out, demanding again and again that California follow the rules. This rivalry becomes obvious the next day, during the most important panel of the entire conference, the Principals Panel. It's the only time in which the lead negotiators from all seven states meet publicly together.
What I would hope that folks in this room get is that shared pain, first and foremost, comes from acknowledging the pain that others have already suffered.
That is the wrong approach.
That's coming up after a break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/paradise, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/paradise now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/paradise.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.
You're listening to Imperfect Paradise, the Gen Z water dealmaker. I'm Emily Guerin. The principal's panel takes place in the Paris Ballroom, which is massive and totally packed. I end up sitting in the back with the sound and lighting guys. The panel begins with a convocation by Jordan Joaquin, president of the Kwitsan Indian tribe.
Heavenly Father, we ask for your guidance and presence that we here today have a we mentality, not an I mentality. In Jesus' name we say amen.
And then he sits down in the crowd and listens along with the rest of us. There are 30 tribal nations that use Colorado River water, but tribes do not have a formal voice in these negotiations, and neither does Mexico. As the panel gets going, there are a few things that everyone seems to agree on. We take more water out of the Colorado River than flows into it. Climate change is causing the river to shrink even more, and to avoid Deadpool, painful cuts will have to be made. But two negotiators in particular are really agreeing with each other, J.B. Hamby from California and his counterpart from Arizona. At one point, the moderator asks everyone what their big take-home message is. Tom Buschatsky, the lead negotiator from Arizona, says,
give license to the people sitting up here that you support to compromise.
In other words, trust us. After a pause, the moderator turns to J.B.,
ditto.
People laugh, but this is a huge deal. Despite both being in the lower basin, California and Arizona used to hate each other's guts. They even ended up in the Supreme Court over the river. Now, they're practically finishing each other's sentences. I'd been hearing rumors that Tom and JB were going to announce something big on this panel. And here it is, although it's so wonky, it's kind of hard to tell.
We're stepping up in discussions about post-2026 in the lower basin to own the structural deficit, to own the supply and demand imbalance.
JB later uses the exact same phrases.
In full agreement with Tom, the structural deficit has been a long time coming. There is a supply-demand imbalance in the lower basin. It's not a new issue.
There is a lot of jargon flying around here, so let me explain. There are two big problems on the Colorado River, a supply problem and a demand problem. The demand problem is that California and Arizona need a lot of water. The supply problem has to do with climate change. There is less water in the river than there used to be, and that means the lower basin is draining the reservoirs. So most of the water in the river starts as snow in the Colorado Rockies, but rising temperatures means less precipitation and more evaporation. It's essentially a hot drought. Snow that does fall is getting sucked into the dry air instead of melting and flowing downstream into the river. This gap between supply and demand is why the water level in Lake Mead is dropping. It's why people are worried about Deadpool. So what JB and Tom are doing here is acknowledging publicly that the gap is a problem. They use too much water, and they're going to cut back.
That's our responsibility. This is a historic thing coming, and it's on our shoulders to be able to resolve it. It's going to be challenging, but it's absolutely necessary.
This moment is what everyone is going to talk about afterwards. It's huge. Esteban Lopez, the negotiator from New Mexico, an Upper Basin state, makes a point of thanking them.
You know, I'm incredibly heartened by the Lower Basin's commitment that they're going to take on and deal with for the first time the structural deficit. That gets us very far in this whole thing.
But these cuts by California and Arizona are not going to be enough to balance the river in the future. Scientists predict the Colorado River will shrink nearly a third by mid-century. And this is where the panel turns and becomes a conversation about pain. Who else, besides California and Arizona, is going to cut back? Here's JB.
There is no user, no state, no country, no basin that can stand up and say, we're out. This is a basin-wide problem, but we're not part of it. It's going to require every single user to be able to participate in resolving this problem in the future.
JB says he's talking about everyone, but really, he's talking about Colorado. The negotiator from Colorado takes the mic.
I want to be real clear right now.
Her name is Becky Mitchell. She's wearing a tweed blazer and glasses. Becky's 49, which means she and JB are the two youngest people on the panel.
What I would hope that folks in this room get is that shared pain, first and foremost, comes from acknowledging the pain that others have already suffered. We can't be asked to share pain if you don't even know what we are experiencing.
In this moment, I don't totally get what pain Becky is referring to. But it seems important because she starts to talk really loudly, almost yelling. Her voice echoes out of the speakers and around the ballroom.
The one person that you cannot negotiate with is Mother Nature. She will win every time. She has been telling us what to do. We have felt her wrath for 100 years. I want an agreement that lessens the pain for all of us, not just some of us.
Later, somebody will tell me that Becky seemed like she was back on her heels, like the Lower Basin had just made this magnanimous offer to cut its use, and she hadn't quite figured out how to respond, except to keep hammering on the same point about feeling her pain. Then Becky brings up the nuclear option.
Yes, I don't want to be in Supreme Court with my friends on the panel, sometimes friends, sometimes not.
A murmur goes through the room. I see people whispering to each other. The negotiators look blank. While Becky's saying, I don't want to go to the Supreme Court, what she seems to be implying is, I will if you make me. Then, negotiators from the other states jump in and say what a terrible idea that would be. Here's John Ensminger from Nevada.
Litigation is so appealing, right? We're going to get those guys. We're going to win. Our position's clear. Look at what it says on the piece of paper.
But, John goes on, what you're actually doing when you go to the Supreme Court
is changing out water professionals who know and have worked on and love this river for guys and gals in black robes that know very, very little about our river.
John thinks that if the Supreme Court gets involved, they could screw over everybody in ways no one can anticipate. And then John does this thing where he tells everyone to lower their expectations for what the current negotiations can accomplish.
They will largely focus on plumbing. They will focus on how we operate. But the one thing I can tell you with absolute certainty, the guidelines will deliver a messy compromise that will be judged harshly by history. That's the cold reality. The only question for the people in this room is whether we will deliver that messy compromise, or whether or not people outside of this room will.
This feels strategic to me, like he's speaking indirectly to Becky, who seems to have much higher expectations for what she's trying to accomplish in these negotiations.
I've heard a lot about we can't get to perfect, and I agree with that. We probably can't get to perfect, but we sure as heck can do better than what we are doing now.
It seems like Becky wants something revolutionary, not something incremental, and she's not willing to compromise until she gets it. The panel never breaks out into outright hostility, but something in the room has shifted. JB makes a comment that's pretty clearly directed at Colorado, but all he says is it's about someone who's not in my respective basin.
I've heard a quote, some months ago, and it, I'll say, is not in my respective basin. And the quote went along the lines of, the only time you should compromise is when you can't advance your position any further. That is the wrong approach.
I see Tom from Arizona nodding along. But I don't know, I kind of get it. I mean, California's gotten all the water it's wanted for generations, and Colorado can't let it go.
Thanks, everybody.
The panel ends, and I start looking for Becky. That's coming up after a break.
How to LA is our love letter to Los Angeles. We'll tell you where to get a yummy torta, a bowl of congee, and of course, a burger.
It's a beef sausage blend, fried egg, grilled onions, and then raspberry jam.
What hiking trails to check out.
This feels like we're out in the mountains.
And where to take in some culture.
Limerick Park, they've been fostering jazz for decades.
LA's a big place with a lot going on, so we got you. Subscribe to How to LA from LA Studios wherever you listen to podcasts.
LAist has a new live event series with the James Beard Foundation. We Are Where We Eat will go behind the scenes of some of your favorite LA restaurants to find out how and why they do what they do. I'm Austin Cross. Join me for the first event where we'll explore how restaurants help make a neighborhood and we'll all have something delicious to eat afterwards. It's May 22nd at the Crawford. Get your tickets now at las.com/events.
You're listening to Imperfect Paradise, the Gen Z water dealmaker. I'm Emily Guerin. I find Colorado's lead negotiator, Becky Mitchell, at the end of a hallway. She's talking animatedly with a reporter from Politico. She's changed out of her black heels and into flip-flops. She doesn't have time to talk to me, but I overhear her chatting with a guy sitting next to me. They're talking about Tom Buschatsky, the negotiator from Arizona. The guy says he saw Tom rolling his eyes while Becky talked.
My name is Chuck Cullum. I'm the executive director of the Upper Colorado River Commission.
I ask him, what does Becky mean when she says acknowledge our pain? What is she talking about?
So, just a couple of very concrete examples.
Chuck explains how people in the Upper Basin use Colorado River water in a fundamentally different way than people in the Lower Basin. In the Lower Basin, all the water comes out of Lake Mead, the reservoir behind Hoover Dam. It's like a faucet. Arizona, Nevada, and California simply call up the federal government and ask them to open the tap.
That is a totally different river experience than in the Upper Basin.
In the Upper Basin, a lot of people literally pull water out of these little streams that feed into the Colorado. If the streams are running low, their water supply can get cut off.
That's real hardship, real risk. In the Lower Basin, they are just now experiencing a river of uncertainty. And we see eye rolling from people on the panel today.
You saw eye rolls?
Yeah. And it's not appropriate. It's like, come up and experience it. Live next to that river. You try and grow hay at 8,000 feet. And in August, that creek is dry. You try that.
Later, I will Google Chuck Cullum and learn that he once compared Lower Basin water users to ski town trustafarians who drive Range Rovers, ski all day, and never get a job. Entitled, assuming the water will always be there, sitting in that big bathtub of Lake Mead. So when Becky's talking about acknowledging pain, she's talking about past pain, what it's been like for farmers and ranchers in the Upper Basin to survive without any guarantee they'll have water that year. As an aside, it's not like the situation is unique to Colorado. This precariousness exists across the West, including parts of California that rely on melted snow from the Sierra Nevada. And also, it's not quite as simple as Becky's making it out to be. There's certainly areas where water users get cut off, but a recent report based on federal data found that the Upper Basin actually uses slightly more Colorado River water in dry years. The report's co-authors wrote that the idea that the Upper Basin is already feeling pain is a dangerous argument to make, primarily because the Lower Basin can see through it. But it's also a great argument, as one of them told me, if you're trying to make the case to the public that it's someone else's turn to make a sacrifice. I asked Chuck how he'd describe the relationship right now between the Upper and Lower Basins.
The principals meet regularly. They have real, unvarnished conversations. What's the quote from The Princess Bride? The future is pain, and anyone who tells you differently is trying to sell you something. It's painful to live within the means of the river. That's the future.
But I mean, I guess people have told me it seems just worse, frankly, than it's been in the past.
Worse how?
Like more suspicious, more distrustful.
Well, I've been working on the river for a long time. We are doing something new and difficult. I don't believe that the conversations are easier or harder than they've been in the past. They're different. The stakes are higher. We burned through all of the resiliency in the system and drew the reservoirs down to 25 or 30% of capacity. So yeah, there's tension, but that's to be expected.
The negotiations underway right now are all about shared future pain. And what Becky's saying is, we're not willing to take on any more pain because we've been feeling it our entire lives. J.B. Hamby says he gets where Becky's coming from. He just doesn't think it's that helpful.
Certainly what is perhaps not a constructive approach is having to start out every discussion and gathering and meeting with acknowledging one particular set of users need to be perceived as having pain.
It's after lunch on the same day as the principal's panel. I'm loitering in the main hallway, eyeing the other lead negotiators. JB is in high demand. His two cell phones keep buzzing, so we only have a couple minutes.
There's statements made occasionally that no set of users is more important than another, and that's true. I agree with that. But that also doesn't mean that some users who are perceived as having needs are more important or absolved from being a part of the solution in addressing these climate change impacts.
In other words, climate change has so fundamentally changed the river that whatever they were doing before is irrelevant. Sob stories about past pain have no place here, and neither do historical grudges against California and Arizona for overusing.
Well, thank you. Where are you off to right now?
Politico. I'm trying to...
Oh, okay.
Cool. Somewhere.
All right. We'll go do it. Thanks. I'll see you around.
Good to see you. Bye.
I am tired. I need caffeine if I'm going to make it to the evaporation and runoff reception, where drinks mixed with Colorado River water flow freely, and platters of vegetables, also grown with Colorado River water, are piled high. As I walk toward the cookie and coffee station, I pass Tom Buschotsky, the lead negotiator from Arizona, slumped on a bench. He's wearing a dark suit and a little lapel pin with the star from the Arizona state flag. Lapel pins are big at CRUA, apparently. I ask him how the negotiations are going.
I like to describe these discussions as kind of a little bit of a yo-yo. The yo-yo goes to the top of the arc and sometimes goes back down to the bottom of the arc. You try to minimize the bottom and accentuate the top. But you can't get frustrated if you end up taking a step or two backwards.
Things could actually be worse. It snowed a ton last winter, boosting the level of Lake Mead by 20 feet. That took some of the pressure off the negotiators, which is helpful, especially because the pandemic kind of set them back.
Is it significantly better in person than on Zoom?
Yeah, because I can go to that guy in the hallway and talk to him and, you know, try to work something out in kind of a safer way than doing it in front of 20 people. If you throw something out in front of 20 people, sometimes five people will say, oh, hell no, and it dies before you ever have a chance.
I get it. It's hard to have a shadow conference on Zoom. Legally, Arizona is in a bad place on the river. If Lake Mead got too low, Phoenix and Tucson would lose access to 100% of their Colorado River water before California would lose a drop. It's kind of wild, but that's how the law is interpreted. This is why it's such a big deal that Tom and JB are getting along so well.
JB's young. I think that's unusual because mostly it's us old guys and women who've been doing this for a long time. I've been doing this for 42 years, right? So he has a very progressive attitude that we haven't always seen in California.
JB is willing to work with Tom to share pain and spare Arizona's cities.
That's what I'm talking about. That's an example of his willingness to think progressively.
JB later told me that someone once complimented him on holding together the boots and the suits in California, the farmers and the city people. He told them, at least I don't have Tom Buschatsky's job. The crisis on the Colorado River impacts so many people so differently. It's the creek flowing dry and the Wyoming cow pasture in the summer. It's the dirt in the Arizona field that used to grow lettuce, blowing dust into the desert air. It's people in San Diego paying to turn ocean water into drinking water. It's the once mighty river that no longer reaches the sea. But climate change doesn't only inflict pain. Tom says it kind of clarifies things.
There are Deadpool projections, right? Well, if there's Deadpool, there's no water. It doesn't matter whether you have a piece of paper that says you have a better access to the water than someone else. If there's no water, there's no water for everybody. So I think that's changed.
In other words, it doesn't matter how much water you have rights to on paper if Lake Mead drops so low that no water can get to you. The seven negotiators now have 3 months to come up with a deal to keep this from happening. And by the end of the conference, it feels to me like some of the people who need to make that deal are very far apart. JB needs to do more than hold the boots and suits together in California. He needs to find a way to reach a compromise that both the lower and upper basins can live with.
That was correspondent Emily Guerin. Coming up on Imperfect Paradise, the Gen Z water dealmaker. JB's path to becoming the youngest lead negotiator ever on the Colorado River.
I find it unpleasant to feel like I'm not being purposeful and I'm not accomplishing something. Like, that bothers me.
And how conditions on the river got so dire in the first place.
Everyone acknowledged that what we negotiated likely was not going to be enough to handle the worst case scenario. It was as far as we could politically go.
That was very unpleasant. And so I resolved myself at that point, never again will I allow this to happen. This is so bad.
Literally just 4 or 5 years later, we realized there was trouble.
That's on the next episode of Imperfect Paradise, the Gen Z Water Dealmaker. Listen to new episodes of the podcast every Wednesday or tune in on Sunday nights at 7 p.m. on LAist 89.3 or LAist.com. This episode of Imperfect Paradise was written and reported by Emily Guerin. I'm the show's host, Antonia Cerejido. Catherine Milhouse is the executive producer of the show and our director of content development. Shayna Naomi Crockmall is our vice president of podcasts. Meg Kramer is our editor. Minju Park is our producer. Jens Campbell is our production coordinator. Luke Runyon is our editorial advisor. Fact-checking by Gabriel Dunatov. Mixing and theme music by E. Scott Kelly with additional music by Andrew Eben. Imperfect Paradise is a production of LAist Studios. This podcast is powered by listeners like you. Support the show by donating now at laist.com/join. This podcast is supported by Gordon and Donna Crawford, who believe quality journalism makes Los Angeles a better place to live. Additional support from the Water Desk at the Center for Environmental Journalism at the University of Colorado Boulder. 7 states on the Colorado River may have to cut back water. But not everyone agrees on how. From Coloradans who blame others for the crisis.
There continues to be a look upstream to solve a problem that we did not create.
To farmers who may lose their livelihoods.
We don't want to cut equal with everybody else.
Will they reach a deal in time? Listen to Imperfect Paradise, the Gen Z water dealmaker, wherever you get podcasts.